Pack structure. Dogs need to create order in the world. We talked about this really briefly. They need clarity. They need to know who's providing food. They need to know who's providing play. They need to know at whose behest they are doing things. They see human beings as members of their pack, and they will interact with people as they would with other puppies or with other dogs. So they know that we're not dogs, but they also don't know how to act other than as dogs, which is a really funny thing. How many people do you know that say things like, my dog thinks it's a person? Anybody ever met anybody who does that? You know, there's lots of people do that, but dogs don't think they're people. They don't even think they're dogs, as far as we know. They just are. They are. They're not. We don't believe they have a lot of consciousness, but if they don't, if they do have some, it probably doesn't include I am dog, you know? So they don't go, I have four paws, all that kind of stuff. Because we have this, you know, constant eye on ourselves and whatnot, but we don't believe they have that. Although, you know, 20 years from now, they're going to find out that that really is true, that they have this self-consciousness, and they're thinking about these kinds of things all the time, and they've got lots of angst. So some dogs, as I said earlier, will seek higher status if there's a vacancy at the top, but most dogs can be very happy as a worker bee. They don't actually try to seek anything. And as long as you are clear, and this is one of the things that my clients, that we talk about a lot, is clarity. Because we're not usually a very consistent species. And the dog needs consistency, just in the same way that a child needs consistency in order to be raised properly. They need to know that their parents are going to be there. They need to have a certain view of the world that is safe. If a dog has a view of the world that is safe, then they can make forays into the unsafe world and be okay. But if their world inside is not consistent and not safe, then it's very difficult for them to do that. Does that make sense? So the concept of dominance, people use that term to describe certain behavioral characteristics, including and not limited to confidence, posturing, standovers, mounting, muzzle punches, body slamming, certain kinds of possession are called dominant possession. So those are some of the things that they say. And actually, it's very funny. Sometimes they you know, people will say dominance is the dog just being confident, or the dog not being confident, or whatever. Dominance is used all the time by many different people in many different circumstances. So the word has really lost an awful lot of its efficacy. It does exist. You can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It does exist. It's just that it doesn't exist everywhere that people seem to think it does exist. So they often think of aggression as being dominance. Aggression is very rarely dominance. Aggression is usually fear.
This is actually back to what you said about dogs, so say I have four paws or something like that. If they lose the leg, and I had a dog who lost the leg, she got along just fine. She just managed to adjust.
Yeah.
That's not consciousness. That's what would you call it? Instinct?
That would be just that the dogs accept what happens.
Yeah.
They have a pure acceptance of what happens. So if you cut off one of their legs, they have three more legs and they just trot along on them.
Yeah.
They don't, you know, there's a wonderful old Buddhist saying, which is that, you know, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional.
Yeah.
Right? And it's really true that pain is inevitable, but in the case of dogs, they don't suffer the same way that we suffer, because we think tomorrow I'm going to feel just the same as I do today. This is awful. And the next day I'm going to feel awful. You know, whatever. We look into the future. We've got all this stuff that we put on ourselves, and we do not believe dogs do. So if you want to know why we love dogs, it's because they are. Because they are. They doesn't mean that they're always nice animals or whatever, but they live here and now, and they are really, they're good Buddhists. You know, they're much better Buddhists than we ever are. So social dominance, which is the appropriate term for it, social dominance is who controls the resources. When they want something, do they get it? That's social dominance. So if you were going to, if you had a dog, a client, and that client's dog was walking all over him, and, you know, maybe growling at them or something like that, which is really very scary. Anybody here been growled at by their own dog? It's scary.
Yeah.
When a dog does that to you, you feel a horrible thing. You feel an erosion of trust. You feel like, oh my God, I trusted you and now you're growling at me. Not to mention biting, but just growling at you will do it.
It's much more than if a stranger dog.
No, yes, far from her. You feel betrayed. You feel betrayed. A dog, your dog has growled at you, and after you giving them so much love and affection and all that, and then they're growling at you because you're trying to take something away from them or whatever. And when I have a client who's afraid of their own dog, I know that we're probably not going to be able to be successful working with that dog and that person because the dog, that bond is broken. And it's very, very difficult to get that bond back again. But anyway, that's what social dominance is control of the resources when they want it. So if you have a pack of three dogs and there's one bully stick and it's in the middle and one dog absolutely has the right to go get it if they want it, that's a dog that is socially dominant over the other dogs in the household. If that dog growl, if another dog has a bully stick and growls when a dog walks past, that's just ownership. That's not dominance. So if you have three dogs and one of them is on the bed and another dog gets up on the bed and the one that's up on the bed just stares at them and they get off the bed, that dog is socially dominant. If it, you know, if it shares the space, it's probably not. So people don't even know which dog in their home is socially dominant because they think it has a lot to do with aggression. But in a lot of cases, it is just, you know, star power. You know, I get what I want when I want it, and that's really cool. And if you want to make sure that you have it in your house, then all you have to do is take control of the resources. And I'm going to talk about that in just a minute, of how you would take a control of the resources. But resources include, for our purposes, food, space, toys, attention. Those are things that are really important. If there are no resources in question, there's generally no dominance about it. So whoever gets access to the food, to the toys, to the space, to the beds, to whatever, that dog may or may not be socially dominant. And attention is a big one. And usually with my clients, that is the area where the dog is becoming dominant in the household. So the dog might come up and this is golden retrievers and labs all over the place, you know. This is how they show their social dominance. Is it a bad thing? No. It's not a bad thing until it becomes a bad thing. So if they just want attention and they get it every time they want it and people are okay with giving it to them, that's probably not a bad thing. If, on the other hand, they want it so much that they will actually try to make sure you do it by growling at you or really, really, really being pushy, then it is a bad thing. So with attention, if you're the one who initiates the attention, then you're socially dominant. I'm now getting so tired of that word. I've said it too many times. You are the, you know, you're the one. You're the boss. If they're the one who starts the interaction, then they're the boss. Not always, but sometimes. So I had a client with a really lovely little golden retriever, and we were just sitting at the kitchen table, and the dog would go over to the sliding glass door and bark, and so she'd open the sliding glass door. And the dog would go out, and about a minute later, the dog would come back and bark on the outside, and she'd open the sliding glass door, and the dog would come in. And during the first half hour of our consult, the dog did this about 20 times. And I finally said, "So why are you letting the dog in and out?" And she said, "Because she wants it." And you know, right there, it's like, okay, that's what's wrong with your relationship, is that the dog is demanding and you're complying. Now, this was also a really good mama, mother, human being mother. Mm-hmm. And so she took her kids wherever they wanted to go. She took them to after school classes. She took them to this. She took them to that. And they were very demanding of her. So they were actually more socially dominant over her, too. Yeah. You're just looking.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no, I'm just massaging my neck.
Oh, massaging. Yeah. I look for a little sign. It's okay. So I said, stop doing that. And she goes, "What?" And I said, "Just don't open the door next time." And she said, "But then she'll bark at me." And I said, "Yeah, she probably will." So she stopped. and the dog barked at the door. And the dog was barking at the door like this. Bark. Bark. You know, and I said, and she, the woman's like looking at her, feeling like she's going to disappoint her. And I said, just keep talking to me. And that went on for about 4 minutes. And she said, isn't this irritating? And I said, yeah, it's irritating. But, you know, we can get past this. And after about 4 minutes, the dog went, oh, the hell with it. And lay down, went to sleep. And didn't bother us again for the next 45 minutes. Yeah.
There's a Maltese puppy that I work with. And the lady would always just, like, come and hand him to me. And I always wondered why she did that. I thought maybe they were, you know, she was just affectionate with him. But she was holding him so that he wouldn't bark on the way down in office.
Uh-huh.
And so when I finally came up to pick him up, she started to hand him to me, which is always very awkward too, because it's just awkward to hand the dog to him.
Uh-huh. That's not the same thing.
Well, I told her that she shouldn't avoid it, and I walked him down and I corrected him, and I found out she was being pushing the elevator. He was being pushed on the way to the elevator and out of the elevator.
Uh-huh.
He would go to the front, he would bark at someone approaching, and...
Yeah, those are not, that's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's probably got a lot of fear in it.
Mm-hmm.
So the dog is trying to tell everybody, I'm coming, get out of my way, get out of my way. Now, it could also be just being pushy, but it's not necessarily, it could be telling the woman what to do.
I thought he was telling them what to do.
It could be. But it's more likely that he's actually doing, he's learned to do this, and he's probably also a little bit afraid. So he's trying to, so he's trying to clear the way. Lots of little dogs bark.
So is it better if she raises him up?
Yep. Usually it is. Yeah. Yeah. With little dogs, it's often better to raise them up, to put them up higher. But, I mean, you could be right, and you certainly probably are right in that there is a tendency on the part of people who own little white fluffy dogs, or not even white fluffy dogs, little white dogs, to actually cater to their every need. And in that case, the dog is dominant. I mean, I have one case in point that's a Maltese, and it bites the owner, the husband, regularly. Would get up on the bed, and I actually have video of it somewhere, where the husband goes to pet the dog and the dog's like, bah! And then at the mom, oh, hi, I love you. And the husband loves the dog, really would like to love the dog, but at this point he feels like he's being cast out, which indeed he has been. And they had the dog sleeping in the bed with him, and every time the husband would touch the dog in the bed, this is actually a normal dominance issue, that every time the dog would touch, that the husband would touch the dog, the dog would go, bah! But if the wife did it, it was fine. So he was trying to control everything. So that's what you're looking for, is trying to control, but you have to be careful because there's a lot of fear in a lot of dogs. And
I told her to stomp her foot and say that's enough,
mm-hmm.
and he stops, and I'm taught him to sit.
Yeah, so you're giving him instructions.
Yeah.
And instructions are always good, even whatever the motivation, it's always good. So, you know, because you're being clear. Remember I was talking about clarity? The clarity is very, very important. Yeah?
Well, it seems like that's also really important, and I may be learning this from you, that you don't just say no to a dog. You have to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
If you want them to stop doing something, you have to tell them what to do.
Right. You're going out, if you just say no, you're going under the assumption that they knew what they were doing wrong.
Yeah.
And so you tell them to stop it, but they don't know what you wanted. They don't know what's doing wrong.
And they need to know something else.
And they need to know what to do that's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, for dogs that demand bark for something, if you give in to them, it'll just get worse. And it will get worse and worse and worse until I have a doodle client whose dog was, the first time I was there for an hour and a half, the dog just barked at the washing machine. Because that's the washing machine is where she puts the balls. She was trying to hide them in the washing machine, but the dog has a good little nose. And so the dog, and she kept on telling, you know, saying that the dog was doing this. And I said, okay, from here on out, I mean, we've done a lot of work now at this point. I think I've seen her 3 or 4 times. I said, but this was it. The first time I said, from here on out, there's no ball playing in the house, period. And after she got over her own real disappointment that she couldn't play ball in the house, she's amazed at the difference in the dog's behavior. And so she takes the ball, she puts them someplace, and it doesn't matter how much the dog looks at them and barks, like this dog that was, you know, doing the sliding glass door, it won't make a difference. And this dog has actually learned how to relax completely in the house because it doesn't get that kind of... Now, we play ball with our dogs in the house, but they don't demand it. They get very excited if we pick up the ball, you know. So there's a really nice behaviorist. Myrna Milani, Myrna is M-Y-R-N-I-A, I think. Anyway, Myrna Milani, M-I-L-A-N-I. And I don't know that she's doing seminars anymore, but she's a really well-balanced individual and has some very good advice. If you ever want to go to her website, she's got some really good stuff. But she said a long time ago, you know, that the leader acts and the follower reacts. And I think that that's absolutely right. Well, usually demand barking, the dog is actually looking at you or looking at what they want, okay? So the dog with the sliding glass door is looking at the sliding glass door.
Or the ball.
Or the ball or whatever. So if it's anxiety barking, it's not directed.
Okay.
It's an undirected. And normally it's a slightly different sound. Some dogs, have a wide variety. They have a big vocabulary, and you can actually tell the difference. Other dogs, not quite so much, but it's important from the point of view of modifying. If a dog is anxiety barking, then disallowing certain things probably isn't going to have the slightest bit of effect on the dog. Whereas if it's demand barking, what you do is going to have more effect than anything else. What you as an owner, you as a handler, do.
I have a chow in a class right now that I can't tell if it's demand, but now that you're saying that he's focused on something, he's focused on his owner.
He's focused.
Just sit there and just.
Now, he could also be anxiety barking and telling the owner, get me out, get me out, get me out, get me out, because I can't handle it.
Okay.
So that, in a way, is the combo of both of them, because the dog is going, I am so distressed.
Right.
In the class, what happens if you take them outside? Are you a teacher or an assistant?
I'm an assistant, but I co-teach with Amy McPherson.
Okay.
She's letting me co-teach with her.
Okay,
A couple of times I've said, why don't you take them out and just give them a breather?
Uh-huh.
And I think he might be one of those dogs too that does better in motion. So when it's the quiet time and we're talking and people are asking questions, that's when I can tell he starts getting...
Then it's probably his demand barking. It's probably a strong element of demand because I'm bored. Mom, I'm bored. Mom!
By telling him to go out, I'm feeding
Yeah,
him
I it. Want something to happen. Give me something to happen. I really want something to happen
and
now.
So by putting him in motion, then I'm giving him exactly
Yeah, you're giving him something to do. Yeah. So, yeah, and he doesn't. How old is this dog?
I think he's 2.
He needs to learn to relax on cue.
Yeah.
He's a very, that's in the end what obedience classes are all about, isn't it?
Right, right.
You have to learn to relax on cue.
Right.
When I tell you to do this, that's when you're supposed to do it.
Uh-huh.
So he might be anxious, but he's probably also bored. Mm-hmm. But it would be interesting to take them outside. So instead of you saying just go outside, take them outside and see his behavior towards her and her behavior towards him.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
So it could be very,
well,
give you a lot of information. Yeah, update us next week on how that's
Thursday
going.
Night, so
yeah. Yeah.
So when you're playing ball with yours, if they bring you the ball, do you throw it?
We ignore it.
Oh, you ignore it.
Yeah.
So you have to initiate.
We don't always initiate it. Sometimes it's very cute. And so we go, oh, do you want to play ball? Let's go outside and play ball. But most of the time, we decide when we're going to do it. And so they learn that the ball is not interesting unless it's being held by the person. Toys are not interesting unless, in this way, what we have, in a house with 4 dogs, we have a very quiet house because all the dogs just kind of They know that they can completely relax until we say we're going to do something. So they're not always thinking, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this. Does this make sense? Because if they're going, if they learn to just relax because we're going to provide for all their needs and don't you worry, it's going to happen, you know, then we can, that they can just, you know, do their 90% of sleeping, right? They can just kind of sleep until we say, okay, it's time to go. So then we can take, I can take dogs to class because they know that, and that's why I say don't feed the dogs. Because I don't want the dog coming up and going, hey, I want some food. Give me some food. Give me some food. And the problem is we think it's adorable. Oh, look, he's begging. You wouldn't like it at home with your own dog, you know. So this is being a good leader. Hello, come on. So dominance in a multi dog home can shift from dog to dog depending on the desired resources. And this, our two Rottweilers, Barney was my mother-in-law's dog, and he was definitely a wannabe. He was very pushy, but he was a coward at the same time. So he was a bully. The people who had owned him before, he was trying to make him into a police dog, and Barney was afraid to cross streams. He would like, oh, I can't, it's wet. I can't do this, oh my God. 120-pound dog. I can't cross streams. I'd go over a bridge and he'd go, oh, well, I'll wait for you here. And yet, at the same time, he could be a real butthead. I remember at the shelter, I had him at work, and one of my coworkers came into my office when I wasn't there, and Barney barked at her and started lunging at her. And luckily, it was somebody who was extremely strong-willed, and she just told him to sit down and shut up. And he went, whatever you want me to do. And he never gave me any other trouble after that at all. But that was Barney, and then Joe Bear was a really stable dog. So Barney controlled all the resources in the house because he was very confident in the house. But because he was such a wuss outside, he didn't control anything outside. So Joe Bear did that. Now, Barney controlled the egress and the door. So if he wanted to go through the doorway first, you know, I've always said all dogs want is to go through, eat what we eat and go through the doors first. That's all they want, you know. So he would want to go through the door first, and as soon as he'd get through the door, he would attack Joe Bear on the way out. So Barney would go out, wait for Joe Bear, and then poor Joe Bear, he'd be going, you know, the door, Joe Bear would be going, Mom, what do I do? How do I go out? Because there's Barney right there. So what I would do is I would escort Joe, I would let Joe Bear out, and then I would escort Barney out. And they eventually just learned that this is what you do. You know, this is how the thing worked in our house. They had a puppy behavior though that was really interesting because Barney would go get the ball if I threw it, and then Joe Bear would come and take it out of his mouth to bring it back to me. That's a puppy behavior. So that one would actually continue into adulthood.
What did he bring back to you?
The ball?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I was not sure.
Yeah, no, they could bring the ball back. Yeah. So sometimes in multi-dog issues, there is a strong leader dog. Usually that dog is stable. There are no confrontations. You should not have a problem with it. And then sometimes there are not. Dogs, by the way, are not usually dominant to strangers. Now, Dr. Karen Overall, she indicates in some of her material that she believes that they are dominant. But I think it might be, it's very rare if it does happen. So if a dog is aggressive to you in somebody, you know, you go to somebody's home and the dog is aggressive to you, the chances are it's territorial or fear. But it's probably, dog is probably not trying to tell you what to do, right? This does occasionally, it does occasionally skirt into that area when a dog that liked you at first is now sitting on your foot and won't let you move. And there are dogs that do that. They'll sit on your foot and then they'll go into the bathroom with you, escort you into the bathroom, and escort you back out again. And then they sit on your foot again. So they're really being controlling. Now, are they being dominant? I don't know. I think it's usually just suspicion. They don't want to make you do anything, right? And they're not controlling any resources. They're just controlling you. And that's, by the way, pretty scary. You go into somebody's house and they say, oh, my dog is wonderful, just needs a little work on this, and here's this dog that's sitting on your foot. And then, you know, every time you move, it looks up at you like, I wouldn't. And you're trying to be really friendly and happy and nice with your client. Everything is fine! I'm good here, everything is good. Okay. Body language. How are we doing on time? Okay, we're good. Okay, so this is body language. This is something that people think they know really well, and sometimes they do. And I do think that a lot of times we know it deep in our gut, but we don't quite believe it. But body language is so similar, and really, honestly, it's similar in dogs and people, if you just allow it to be. Yes, we have a totally different configuration, but there's an awful lot that we have in common with body language. So this is one of the drawings my daughter did, and you can see that Bold and Confident is forward-looking with the tail basically up. This is obviously a dog with prick ears and a long tail, so as soon as you get into short tail and drop ears, you get problems. And then a dog that's neutral just looks neutral. They just kind of look like, in a person, this would be Bold, right? Or looming, people who loom. And in neutral, it's kind of like that. So you can see it really is similar, that if you just allow yourself to take that leap. A dog that's playful or flirtatious, how many of you cannot play with your dogs by just kind of going? Right? As soon as you do that, they start to play. That's that position. That's exactly the same position. And a dog that's scared and worried, the tail is down, the ears are back, the mouth is closed usually, or it's wide open. It can be very much a wide open kind of trying to bring in a lot of food. And if a person is frightened, they make themselves small. They kind of curl up, they make themselves smaller. And a dog that's submissive and appeasing, well, they most of the time, they'll either look up underneath their brows at the person, or they look away from the person or the other dog. And we do the same thing. We're like this, if we're submissive or appeasing. So you can see that there's an awful lot. You can also see why dogs can read us so easily, because they're reading the same thing in us that we are reading in them, if we only allow ourselves to do it. It's constantly amazing to me how people say, I can't tell what my dog is thinking. Now, if it's a bulldog or a pug, I can understand that, because they're hard to read. Any of the dogs with the flat faces, really hard to read.
And other dogs have problems.
Other dogs have problems too. They can't do it. You know, it's very, very, very difficult to do that.
Does your daughter sell that poster?
That it's in the handout. Did you? Yeah.
Oh, I got it. Well, but it would be. I want it for my shop.
You want it for your shop? Sure. I'm sure she would. So just can you write to me and then I will send her and she'll
and
give
she
you.
She can do one for cats.
And she can do one for cats? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so this is just a wolf. These are wolf pictures. Okay, so this is submissive. These are submissive behaviors. This is play, but it's a standover. This is my daughter being licked by a wolf, and he was very tall, so it's because she's going, okay, hi, because he's very, I mean, he's up on a rock, and he was licking her. This is not submissive licking. he was kind of testing her. Okay, so dogs use a variety of postures to communicate their intentions, from submissive and appeasing to confident and overconfident. Okay, so in most, but not all cases, a leader does not impose, he is acknowledged, and peace is maintained. So signals from the subordinate include some of the things we were talking about with puppies. Licking, groveling, flipping over, squinting, folding their ears, play bows. All those are submissive or appeasing or deferential type behaviors. They are great. If your dog does that kind of stuff, you're just very happy, because those are really clear and they're exactly what you want, how you want your dog to behave. The things that, where is it? I don't know where it went. Oh, well. The things that leaders do, staring, standovers, mouth holds, where they do this, taking space, that's all stuff that leaders do. And they are all very clear in the wolf world. They are far less clear in the dog world, and they're even less clear in the dog to human world, I mean the human to dog world, because we don't know what the heck we're doing a lot of times. This is an interesting thing for me. The more confident a dog is, the less he or she needs to use body language. So they tend to be much more still. A really confident dog might. If you are bitten by a confident dog, sometimes you get absolutely no warning or very, very, very subtle warning, because that dog is quite confident in what he or she can do. How do they practice this stuff? They practice it through play. Play is one of the best ways for a dog to learn how to communicate with other dogs. And so it is really good to have dogs have play partners as much as possible. But that means play partners that they know, that they can actually develop a relationship with, as opposed to just a bunch of strangers in different dog parks or something like that. Yes?
Just on the slide before, I'm not sure what you meant when you said folded ears. What is that?
For play behavior?
For appeasement.
Or for appeasement? Oh, just when they're folded back like this, or they're slightly forward. You know how they go back and then they go slightly, but like a little human ear kind of thing. So dogs can be ambivalent. That's who was it? Oh, I think it's Temple Grandin who says that dogs cannot be conflicted, cannot hold two different emotions at the same time. I don't know whether she's right or not, but they can certainly hold them in very quickly together. So a dog can be ambivalent, can go, I like you, but I'm a little bit afraid of you. And I see that all the time, and I'm sure you guys do too.
When dogs pin their ears, doesn't that mean they're protecting themselves? Are they ready to defend themselves?
When they pin their ears, there's usually a huge element of fear.
Okay.
Yeah, by and large, if the ears are pinned all the way back. It can also be, then if they open their eyes wide and they stare at you, it can also be a threat. Depends on the individual dog in that case. And you can usually tell, because each one of these, like the ears, the eyes, whatever, they all have to be in combo with another one. And so you can usually tell if a dog is pinning its ears and is threatening you because the eyes are staring at you, whereas if it's fearful, then the eyes are probably going to be looking a little bit different direction. Although I have to say, fear often, you know, dogs will really stare at you if they're afraid. Again, if there's a spider crawling down the wall, a great big huge spider, where are we all looking?
Spider.
At the spider. So, because we have a tendency to stare at whatever is really scaring us. Okay, so people who go to dog parks often want other dogs to correct their dogs. It's not usually a good idea because many dogs learn to overcorrect, or they don't want to take on that job, and there's no reason why they have to take on a job that they don't want to take on. And in the dog park, if a dog is an adolescent dog, they often will try to come up and make a new relationship with each dog. They may try and posture, but usually those dogs are just trying it on. That's part of their kind of becoming an adult thing, as opposed to a dog that is already an adult. After the age of three, they're not usually interested in defining new relationships that quickly. Okay, so this is a really good piece of, this is some good submissive stuff going on here and some confusion. This is a wolf hybrid meeting a German shepherd at a dog park. And there's something wrong with the camera that my student was using. So it'll kind of go in and out of focus, but it's still really worth it.
So your dog is a shep. How old is your dog?
Just about two.
And what's his name?
Bogey.
And what made you decide to get Bogey?
Here's the wolf.
Bogey was a replacement for another shepherd that I had.
Did you get him from
now,
a breeder?
Look at that! How low the cat head is carried. This dog is deferential.
Well, they range, but this one.
Look, he's dropping way down. This is not stalking, is it?
No.
Now lip licking right there. And it's gonna do a, remember I said wolves were really clear? And the German Shepherd's like, what are you doing?
Like part wolf.
She is.
There's, she's on a line because like all wolves, she's escape oriented. Or not like all, like most. But look at her try. Look at her. Lick, 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 lick. So she's trying to get a relationship with this German Shepherd who may be intact. I don't know. Pretty, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
And she's gorgeous.
So was he not quite understanding what she was saying?
Uh-uh. Yeah. He's not used to that dramatic of body language. And he doesn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah. Was he older?
The dog is older? Yeah, he's like 5 or 6.
So he's not all that interested if he's older.
Well, he said, I don't know whether he was intact, but she was spayed probably, so he's not going to be interested. Females, you know, like intact dogs, regardless of whether they are female spayed or not. They're like, oh God, you are really cute.
That's
why
I
was
intact with my dog. When a dog walks in and my feet, I'm like,
oh, God.
I don't care about any dog.
No, you're just so cute. You're so cute. Yeah, yeah. So this is my German Shepherd, Strider, meeting a pit bull who does the same thing.
Well, now he says, oh, now I got to perform on camera.
And he's going to get just as confused. He's an investigator.
This is the most he's given.
You love me. He goes, no, you're not all that interesting.
Manipulative little critter, isn't she?
Little slut. Yes, there are some dogs that play hard to get, but she obviously was not one of them. And now Strider's actually doing what are called displacement behaviors. He's going, boy, this grass is interesting. You know, his nose will go onto the ground. He's going, I don't know what to do with this dog. I have no idea what to do with this dog who's doing this flippy over stuff. Because we're not used to seeing these tremendously overt behaviors. Golden Retriever females will do this. They flip over. The problem is other dogs, it confuses other dogs, and it actually kicks some dogs into prey drive. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is if a dog is fearful, this dog was not, but if a dog is fearful and they flip over and another dog gets too close, then they get freaked out because the other dog is too close and they'll attack the other dog. So they're giving off conflicting signals, and you know, this particular behavior is not a behavior to encourage because most of our dogs don't know what to do with it. They don't have a clue. But you can see how very... Does it look to you like she was being submissive?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
She's being manipulative. She's kind of going, love me, love me, love me, but she's not, you know, she doesn't want him to bully her. She's not, looking for acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, I guess it could be considered submissive. But he didn't demand it, you know. And I think she's just kind of going... You know, I want a relationship with you. And so instead of being the kind of pushy, I want a relationship with you, this is the opposite. I want a relationship with you. I want to find out. Yeah?
How do you get the dog out of that?
You pull him out. I mean, you kind of, come on, let's go. I mean, you don't do it in a nasty way. Just,
yeah.
We're gonna, yeah, you just don't let him do that. You want
to
get
over, lick, we'll do all that.
Yeah, so, and it's possible that it is submissive. I don't now know without seeing it. If you had a piece of video of it, that would be good. It could also be that the dog doesn't want to get in the car. This is some dog's ways of saying, I'm a sweet, nice dog, but please don't make me get in that car.
Yeah.
And or it could be that there's another dog that's not letting me in the car.
I actually have trouble getting in the car when I fall over the car.
Yeah, he probably doesn't want to get in the car. Yeah, so he's being really nice about telling you.
Yeah.
He could tell you other ways. Mm-hmm. But what he's doing is saying, I really don't like this. So are there dogs in the car when you're there? Or is he the only one?
He's the first one usually.
He's the first one and he didn't want to get in the car.
Yeah. This is a little thing, and then now he gets in. He's only 7 months old, so now he's jumping in on his own.
Okay, good. Because a lot of times if you're a dog walker and you have a dog that doesn't want to get in the car, if there are other dogs in the car first, you pull them out and then you get that dog in. And that oftentimes stops the behavior problem. But yeah, he's probably got, you know, how many dogs do you usually carry in that car?
Six.
So he probably has a memory, a really strong memory of who's in the car with him. And even though he's the first one in there, he feels conflicted.
Yeah.
Wants to go, but doesn't quite want to go. Wants to go, but doesn't quite want to go. So the more you can just make it a happy-go-lucky, yes, this is what we do kind of thing, the better off you are. Okay, so this is a really good, remember I said mouth hold? This is a Malinois giving a pushy adolescent dog a mouth hold. So there's one, two, three, four. Can you see how much pressure is not on the dog's muzzle?
Yes.
It's a really light hold. This is the move, and you remember how we were talking about flipping another dog over, how they don't usually do that? They do this. They take that, and Turid Rugas, who's a really good trainer from Norway, she actually teaches her students to do a mouth hold, to actually use their hand and push down on the muzzle as a way to discipline their dogs. So people do it by just doing that, because that is a very natural way to discipline a dog. And you can really see how natural it is, because this guy is just doing it and he's just holding it in there, and she's got her tongue sticking out, so she's doing a tongue flick, which is a sign of distress, but she's accepting it. Of course, she's also very resilient, so as soon as he lets go, she pops right back up and is a little butthead again, you know. But anyway, isn't it cool? This was taken by a photographer. That's really good. So we already talked about space. Just to go into that a little bit here. Threat causes animals to increase space. So if you're dealing with a dog, we did talk about it, right? Last time? Yeah. I'm getting confused with what I talked about with the lab rescue thing yesterday. So I can't remember. Threat will cause animals to increase space. Lack of threat will cause animals to decrease space. So that's one of the reasons why you would, if you're working with a fearful dog, you don't go towards the dog, because the dog will then try to increase the space. Whereas if you actually sit on the floor, you're decreasing space. And that will cause the dog to decrease space. You see what I'm getting at? So this is not just physical space, this is mental space. So here you are, you're standing up like this, and here's the dog. You move towards the dog is going to increase the space. Now here, if you back up, the dog will decrease the space. But if you sit down, it also will cause the dog to decrease space. Sitting down has a huge impact on a dog's behavior. Sitting down, I'm going to repeat that. Sitting down has a huge impact on a dog's behavior. So does standing still and looking sideways. Both of those things. Yeah.
I just wanted to share something real quick. My first dog as an adult was a rescue who was just frightened beyond words about everything. I mean, his tail was always tucked, you know, and I was having a hard time with him, and so I went to Silicon Valley Humane Society when they were still in San Jose. And their behaviorist, the first thing she did was she sat on the floor and didn't look at him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like miraculous for me to watch this dog when we'd approach anybody. Gradually, he just kind of crept over, and then the treats came out. She's still not looking at him. It was amazing to watch.
Yeah. Eye contact Eye contact increases space, decreases space. So if you look at a dog, they will read that as threat. They will then tend to increase space. If you draw your eyes away, they will decrease space. There's an awful lot of stuff that happens really subtly because dogs are always, we listen to people's words, sometimes probably too much. They only watch our bodies. You know, if you make nice little cooing noises, that's very helpful, but it's not going to be the deciding factor. Where your body is in space is going to be the deciding factor. So when you work in a shelter, you get used to getting your jeans all dirty because you're always sitting on the floor. Because you've got all these fearful dogs in the shelter, and I used to sit on the edge of things and just sit like this for maybe 5 minutes while the dog completely goes up and down and all over me, going, who are you, where do you come from, when did you last take a shower, what kind of soap did you use, all that stuff. And then maybe I would start to actually get some, get a little bit of interaction going. It is really fascinating. Yep.
So I have a little furry white dog, and he, when I hold him, I'm wondering if it's a space issue or if it's a resource guarding issue. When I'm holding him, he's fine meeting the other dogs, but when I'm holding him, he'll growl at another dog that will try to totally.
You're giving him self-confidence.
Okay. Because on the ground, he's fine.
Yeah.
Although he's not, he'll meet.
He probably doesn't want to, not very much, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, okay, we done it, yeah. You know, so it can't keep going on for, you know, if there's a dog that's pushing.
Well, actually, you bring up a good point, because there's space and time. And we'll see that in some of the videos. Space is how close you allow somebody to get. But remember when I was shaking somebody's hand and did that thing? The longer you stay in that position, the more awkward it gets for the person. So if I'm going to shake your hand and get really close to you, and I keep shaking, that's the other thing. I mean, if you just shake somebody's hand, I won't do it to anybody again. But you shake somebody, and you keep shaking it, and you keep shaking it, shaking it. They go, this is too long.
Yeah.
This is not working. This, you know, I'm not keen on this at all. And so that is the same thing as getting really close. So what your little dog is doing is going, okay, I can handle 3 seconds. But you do much more than that, and I'm not coping very well, okay? And I think that's the same thing with your little girl. She likes just a few seconds of a connection, and then, no, that's going to be enough. I don't want any more than that. But what's happening when you put him up in your arms is now he says, I'm with Mom. She's with me. So now things that he would not have enough courage to say if he's on the ground, he now has courage enough to say.
If it goes on for too long.
Yeah, but he'll only do it if they're too long.
Yeah.
So he's trying to force them away. But if he's up here, this is what he wants to say right away when he's down below. But because he's up here, now he can say it. So it's like, and little dogs are interesting because they're, you know, two different types. There are the little dogs that get worse when they're being held, and there are little dogs that get much better when they're being held. She's much, wherever Aspen is, she's probably in there, she's much better when she's being held. And she's, although she's fine most of the time anyway, but it is, that's why. It's paper courage. You know, it's what it is. Okay, so these are some, the interesting things about space. So these dogs all here don't know each other very well. This is the animal, the adoption supervisor at Marine Humane Society, and she's a small dog nutcase, and so she's got, these are all shelter dogs, and can you see how much space they have in between each one of them? That's what they would prefer to have, is, you know, that much space, which is probably maybe a foot to a foot and a half. All these dogs get along fine, but they still have their personal space. Those are our three little dogs, and you can see how little space they need, because they know each other really well, so they're all sitting on top of as close to being on top of Tricia as they possibly can. And then this dog down here, I have video of this dog, but I'm going to do it right now. This dog here is getting up because the child is crawling towards him, and he cannot handle that amount of space. So he's getting up to move. So he's going, okay, you're too close, I've got to get out of here. So these are all kind of space things. Some dogs are more comfortable with more or less. So this person who sent me this this picture didn't realize that this dog is really uncomfortable. Really uncomfortable. I'm turning my back to you, I'm facing away from you. This dog, on the other hand, is perfectly comfortable. No problem at all. So this dog has a little bit more fear. These two dogs love each other to pieces, and they're right next to each other. So the closer you allow somebody, the more affectionate you are towards them. And this is also true of us, right? So you have a spouse or a boyfriend, a girlfriend, or whatever, you're going to be really close with one another. But for most people, you require that personal space. We often forget that with dogs, and so we put them in spaces that are too small for them and then force them to cope. They cope by turning their heads away in most cases, but there are times when they get into fights, and that's usually because they're too close to each other. Animals also use pressure, emotional, or environment to control their own space. They stare at another dog to increase space, and they gaze away to allow space to be decreased. So, you know, they might just stare at you, and that's going to make you back up because they're staring at you. And it works, by the way. If you've been stared at by a dog, you don't go any closer, you know, because that would be a stupid move. On the other hand, you will go closer if they look away, and that's exactly what you were just talking about with somebody, your person sitting on the ground. The other thing animals will do that I suppose we do too, but maybe to a lesser degree, is they will actually push at each other to find out whether they will meet resistance or whether the other will give. So this is what Luke does. He walks up to another dog and he goes, poke, poke, poke. Anybody here have a dog that does that, or anybody seen that?
His nose,
yeah,
or?
Yeah, he uses his nose and just poking. Just pushing. How much resistance do I get out of this? Horses do this all the time. They're constantly pushing at each other. And how much resistance do they get? If you go to Wolf Park, they tell you if the wolf jumps up on you and starts to put pressure on you, stand still. Don't give to the pressure, because if you do, you're showing that you're weak. And so you want to stand still to just show I'm fully in control of everything. So they put pressure on you. And there are some dogs that lean on you. Most of the time they lean on you because they're lazy, but sometimes they lean on you to actually find out how much resistance they get. It's kind of interesting. I think in this particular case with pressure, there needs to be a lot more research done, because it's not something that people think about all that often because we use leashes. But I do think that it exists in the dog world just as it does in all the other animal worlds. There's a poke. Boo used to poke at Dee Dee all the time, and she just put up with it. Boys. Okay, so here's some space control. This is fun. Okay, this is a cat and dog, and you tell me who's controlling the space here. The dog wants to get to the end of the hall. It's a good thing.
What's everybody doing? Look, he's scared of her. Good boy, Sparky.
And now he finds that there is a gate at the end.
It's okay, Papa.
And now he's got to come back. So he goes, I got to get back now.
He's a big puffball. Oh, he's scared.
So look how the dog is angling his head away. He's going, I'm very small, I am not important, I'm just trying to slip by you, please don't, you know.
That's Sparky.
In the backyard, the dog chases the cat. In the house, the cat runs everything.
Cat's cool.
Yep. Now here's another one. This is very cool. This looks like a mirror image. These are two probably siblings. And there is a bunch of kibble on the ground. Okay, so they are doing some space control to see who gets the kibble. Now remember, most confrontations in the dog world are non-violent, because it's stupid for a species to fight itself. except for ours. Okay, here it goes. Giving space, yeah? Mm-hmm. Sitting down is giving space. Now a snarl. And you see, but look what he's doing, he's turning his head away. Mm-hmm. Gonna take another step. And there's a big snarl going on right now with the skunk. Yeah, he's snarling. The one that's closest to us is snarling. So the dog that is sitting has given space. He still really wants the kibble, but he's not quite willing to. Another space. See how he's closing the space. Look, he just gave space. Yeah? Now that.
Excellent. Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, absolutely.
When they're pups, they eat out of the same bowl.
Huh?
When they're pups, they eat out of the same bowl.
Yeah.
When do they stop sharing the kibble pile?
Well, when one of them decides to, I guess. I mean, it depends. I would say that some dogs will continue to do it, but others will compete over it. And it's very difficult for some dogs to eat close to another dog's. It's actually one of the things that I have to worry about with my clients. They want their dogs to eat right next to each other. And I go, look, they don't say grace. They don't share food. They're not talking over their meal. You know, they're not doing anything like that. So give them the comfort of knowing that they don't have to look at the other dog while they're eating. So our dogs eat in four different spots. They're all very happy with that. They all have to do their little routines. Poor Lukey has to do big routines. Sit, down, come stay, all that. Well, he doesn't anymore because he's old now, but for a long time he did. He had to do a lot of deferential stuff. And they're happy to not share, they're happy to not be close. Yeah.
It's so interesting to me that the dog that approached the kibbles, ever so slowly, et cetera, used this kind of, instead of just kind of going in there and I get the kibble, and he just kind of went on, just, he, like,
he insinuated himself.
Huh?
He insinuated himself,
yeah,
in there, yeah.
That was so cool.
Yeah, but
like,
that's
I'm
what that...
I'm not a threat, but now I'm really close to the
yeah,
kibble.
And you know, it's like how some people get power. Very, very subtly. And so this was a very subtle movement, which is actually very cool. Taking space, giving space... that's alpha roll doggy style up there. This dog over here is taking space from can you see how he's taking space from the owner? The owner loves him to pieces. And what kind of dog is this, by the way? It's a Beauceron. Yeah. But very powerful dog and definitely running things in the household. These are two of our dogs playing, and that's a little dog learning how to posture. He's just figuring that out. Okay, so, yeah, it's now 2:51. Does anybody have, before we go on into gender differences and the senses and all that, because I want to do all that next week, anybody have any particular behavior problems that you would like to discuss? Yeah, look at you with your hand all the way up there.
Submissive urination in adult dogs. Like, I tend to need all these puppies, but then later they always pee on me as they grow up, and I don't know how to
Okay, so you're going to have to be a little bit more explicit.
Okay,
do they tend to pee on everybody else too, or is it just you? I mean, is there something about you?
I don't know. So my downstairs neighbors got a Not a Spumoni, a Spinoni.
Spinoni.
Not a Spumoni.
A Spinoni, yeah. It's not something to eat, it's a dog.
Right, and she, you know, first time met a very insecure group puppy, like, not looking at you, not looking, not a cute puppy, fearful. I'm like, oh, hi, you know, and then she was petrified. She was, like, this tall and couldn't get up three stairs with, like, solid back pains. Mm-hmm. Like, it was absolutely ridiculous. And so, but I don't know what I did or said or something, but she just, I'm the favorite person on the planet, and she always wants to greet me, and now she's just turned a year by pain when she sees me. So, and I've had this happen with a few different dogs now, that I've always met at puppies, and I've always loved them and ooly-oggly over them, and I don't know what I'm doing.
Would you think of yourself, characterize yourself as being somewhat effusive?
Yeah.
I would too. And how tall are you?
6 feet.
Yeah.
So
you got a double whammy there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you tamp down your natural inclinations a bit?
I mean, I've been doing that with her. It's just like, hi. Yes, I know I love you too. I've got to get over there. Let's just, I'll walk by and you do your thing.
So when is it likely to happen? Upon first greeting?
Yeah. Well,
okay, and where do you greet this particular dog?
Well, mainly she's just coming out of her apartment, because she's coming out, you know, I live upstairs and I come down around past her apartment. And
what happens if you just completely ignore her?
As far as most of the time I'm really in a hurry, so I'm not really paying attention to it as much. But I mean, she wants attention. I don't think she submissively urinates, but she really wants my attention.
So you really don't have a lot of choice here. You have to pretend that you don't care about her, and then when you get after you've gotten out of the building or whatever, then sit down, make yourself shorter, and allow her to come up to you, and you'll probably get rid of it that way. But you're a very, very outgoing person, and the dog probably just, I mean, I think that you probably instill confidence in the dogs. They become more of themselves. They really like it, but you're also, they think they have to defer to you. And that's part of the difference. So call them Happy Trails,
yes,
as opposed to urination.
And
yeah.
The thing is I just want her to be confident, because I feel like
She's already a fearful dog. She's a Spinoni who didn't want to go up and down stairs, there's only like three breeders of Spinonis in the country. So you know they're inbred like crazy. And one of the most common characteristics in inbreeding that is fear. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's probably the parents are probably like that, the siblings are probably like that. But just tone yourself down, try to make yourself shorter, and really go light on the eye contact. Even to the extent of, you know, when you see them to have a treat or something with you, and you can, what's the dog's name?
Joni.
You can say, hey Joni, and toss a treat and roll a treat along the ground. And that way her attention will be divided, especially if it's something like hot dog or whatever that's really stinky. And that will kick her past that first thing that she's got, like, oh, I love you. Oh, dear, what just happened?
Right.
You know? So, which is kind of what's happening. So you want to get her past that. So I probably would try, especially if you do want to greet her, try the rolling treat thing, because sometimes that kicks them into more fun, and then they like that more better.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Yeah.
When I go to feed my dogs, my oldest one, who's 11, he does really loud barking. And he started it probably about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
There is a lab that lives there. She is not what you call lab-like.
Mm-hmm.
She's very dominant with both dogs. And I can't get him to stop. I mean, if I were to give him a treat or give him his first, that doesn't make a difference.
No, do the dogs, are they on a pretty strict schedule or a fairly loose schedule?
Pretty strict. They know when I get up in the morning, within 15 or 20 minutes, I'm going to.
And when did he start barking?
About 3 years ago.
No, I mean, like when in the whole process of feeding?
When I, usually when I first get up, if all the dogs are up.
Then he starts barking then?
Yeah.
And he barks until you feed him?
Yes.
So he's back chaining?
Yes.
He's going, aha, feeding comes after she's gotten up, so I'm going to start barking now when she's getting up so that eventually I get food. How much do you want to work on this?
A lot, because I have to rent out the back part of the house, and I don't think people are going to enjoy it. He's 55 pounds, but he sounds like he's about 200.
Yeah, a big bark. Well, I'm going to give you the easy way first, which probably won't work. But it would, you know, it's certainly a potential. Put a leash on him in the morning when you get up. Put a leash on him. And then if he starts to bark, try what we talked about already, which is you just hold his collar or hold the leash like right here, short mm-hmm. leash, and until he stops barking and looks away. And then you let it go. And then he'll bark again, and then you do it again. And then he'll bark again, and then you do it again, until eventually what happens is as soon as he starts barking, you start to reach toward his collar. You don't pull it up. You just kind of slightly pull it forward. He'll stop barking, because he'll know that you're, as soon as you're going to reach for him, that he's not going to get what he wants, and that he's going to get what he doesn't want. Those are the two things that are happening, right? So it's called negative punishment. And it may or may not work, but he's 11 years old, so it's going to be hard.
He's very smart.
Yeah. So try that. Then the other thing, there are two other things that I would think about. Do they go for a walk in the morning?
Not usually, because I go to work too early.
So you go to work, and so the feeding is the high point of their day.
Yeah.
Okay. And are they underweight, overweight?
He's at a good weight.
He's at a good weight?
The lab is overweight.
Okay. Really?
I'm surprised. Not due to my feeding, but another person. It's his dog.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you share a house with other people?
Yeah.
And who feeds it? Do you feed all the dogs?
I feed them when I get home in time, but what he's done is the second he gets home, he feeds dogs.
Okay, so your dogs have no patience.
And I don't feed, at night, it's easier at night because for one thing, I'm awake and I'm not annoyed as much as when I get up in the morning with them, and I will make them wait. I just come in the house, I ignore it.
Because what I would do, which is going to be frustrating at first, is I would stop feeding them 15 minutes after I get up in the morning. I would feed them right before I leave sometimes 15 minutes after I get up, sometimes right after I've gotten up, but they don't get to tell me when they're going to eat.
So
right now, what he's doing is he's saying, I want to eat, 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 right? And he's doing it in a way that he knows you're going to make him eat. So if you start varying that, and the problem is that you go to work, so you only have a limited amount of time in which you can feed him.
Well, I can get him earlier.
Or you can get up earlier, because the other thing, you can just forget to feed him. Just, you know, there's a behaviorist in England who says there are very few behaviors in a dog you cannot modify by ignoring the dog and forgetting to feed him. Because then they realize exactly how much power they have and you have, you know, which is none. But you have to start varying it, because if he thinks his barking is getting you to feed him, which it may be, then he won't stop. There's no way he'll stop. If a dog sitting begging and sitting at the table, you know, staring at somebody, thinks that staring is actually bringing food to him, he'll never stop doing it. So that's why you have to do this variable thing. So the easy one is to actually, you know, use the collar or whatever. But I'm not sure that's going to work, because he's probably pretty savvy.
He is.
Yeah. So he probably figures out that this what's happening, you know.
I think it makes it twice as frustrating, because my other mix, he's learned that if he just sits, he's the good dog, you know, and he sits.
You've got your you've got the kid who draws, who, you know, draws on the wall, and then you get your good kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And then I've got the lab that just goes around in circles constantly.
Yeah.
Waiting for hers.
Wait, see, none of those is okay in our house. The dogs do not tell us when they're going to eat. They are all completely relaxed, just like this. And at some point or another, either Trisha and I'll get up and go, okay, it's time to eat. Then they can get excited. But that time varies from day to day, from hour to, you know, it doesn't vary a whole lot, but it does vary enough so that they can't predict it. It sometimes comes after a play period, sometimes before a play period. You know, so, and because if they can predict it, they can start demanding it. And if they can't predict it, they can't demand it.
Well, what do I do about my roommate who feeds the dogs?
That's a problem, isn't it? Yeah.
Can I put him in a kennel?
Yeah, you could do that. You could, I mean, the thing is, you're going to, what I think you're going to end up doing is just modifying the breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably not going to end up modifying dinner because your roommate already does this, right? But breakfast, you have a lot of control over. So I think that you're going to end up modifying that one and not the other one, and that will work because they're time learners too. They'll learn what to expect at which time and all that kind of stuff. But it would be better if it was both. In which case you'd have to say to your roommate, "Look, would you mind if I feed the dogs for the next month? Because I'm going to start to try to work on this." But you'd have, because what he's doing right now is he's, as soon as he gets home, he's feeding them. I know.
He doesn't want to have a solution. He doesn't want to figure it out. He just wants to make it perfect for himself.
And that's part of the solution would be to feed them before they're ready. That would definitely be part of the, but it's only part of the solution. You can't do that all the time.
Right.
It has to be sometimes before they're ready, sometimes after they're ready, sometimes when they're playing. You know, so it has to be at different times so they can't predict it. So
yeah,
they can predict it right now. I mean, they're sitting, they're not, the reason he's not barking right now is because there's nobody to bark at.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, another solution to this kind of thing is by, you know, as soon as he starts barking, you go back to bed. And so one bark, you're back in bed again. The problem is you've got to get up and go to work.
Well, the problem is then the lab will come and just maul me if she doesn't get hurt.
All right, we have more problems. Okay, so I tell you what, why don't you... write down this stuff, and next week we'll see if we can stop the whole mauling situation. Because what you really have a situation right now, and remember I was talking about dominance? You have dominance, it's kind of that somebody else is controlling your life. The dogs are controlling your life. And unfortunately, your roommate isn't helping anything at all, and probably might make it be worse. So we have to figure out a way, and we can do it all of us together, it doesn't matter. We have to figure out a way for you to take back control of your life so that the dogs are part of your life instead of you being part of theirs. Make sense?
Yeah. Oh, no. Absolutely.
Okay. If you could do that, that would be lovely. That would give us all a puzzle.
Okay.
Okay. And I do have some homework for us, for everybody. This is homework for, if you can do it by next week, that would be super spectacular. I would like you to go someplace where there are dogs that congregate. Now, this can be a dog park. If it would be preferable for dogs to not know each other. So if you're a dog walker, then, you know, you can't just kind of watch your own dogs because they're a pack already. So, like, go to a dog park or someplace, where you, an informal dog park or whatever. And you have the two, this is kind of a two-pronged body homework. You watch the dogs. You pick one dog, an active dog, not an old slug. Okay, and watch his interactions with other dogs, watch his body language, and with another dog or with several other dogs, and write down the body language. So that when writing down the body language, you say things like, you know, that the dog A moved towards dog B and placed his head over dog B's shoulder, which is just a real, an ethogram kind of thing, you know, this is what happened. And this is not your dog's, by the way. Your dog should not even be there. And then the second paragraph would be like, you'd be going, dog A is trying to dominate dog B, if that's what you want to say. Or is being pushy, or is someone trying to play. Dog B does not want to deal with it. You know, whatever. This is just stuff. This is not, nobody's going to test you on it. And the second part of this homework is watching the owners and seeing what the owners are doing, which is almost as much fun.
That's so easy. Yeah. On phone.
Yes, on phone. Not paying attention. Telling everybody that my dog is friendly, even when my dog is not friendly. All those. Yes. Yeah. My dog needs somebody to help him learn. Yeah. Stuff like that. Does that make sense? I'll be sending this in an email. Okay. Yeah.
I have a question on the same seminar about water. I can ask it next class.
About water?
You
mean like spraying water on the dog when he does this?
When I'm on a walk, the only thing I haven't been able to train my pack on is crown water. Like, and not waiting. And I feel like if I start to make them wait, it's almost like torture because they're thirsty.
Oh, I think that you know, you probably don't have at all the same kind of situation. Because they're not barking at you for water. Right? So this is not at all the same kind. You have no problems there. You may have problems in other areas. But I think that you see that they have a need for water and you give it to them, which is absolutely appropriate.
But shouldn't I make them wait?
No. No, because you're filling a primal need. No, if it's treats, if you do that, you should. But no, if it's water, they get water.
Treats, they wait.
Yeah, okay. Good. All right. All right, so was this okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. We'll see you next week.